This is Sustainable East End, a show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on the eastern end of Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon, co-producer with Tony Ernst. The Trump administration announced recently that it will open up all U.S. coastal waters to offshore oil and gas drilling. Also, Trump plans to roll back offshore drilling safety regulations put in place after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil rig disaster. That explosion killed 11 people and caused the worst oil spill in American history. And then the GOP-dominated Congress failed to authorize the 9 cents per barrel tax on oil that funds the Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund. That fund was intended to pay for cleanups after accidents like the Deepwater Horizon spill. We spoke recently with Stony Brook University conservation biologist Carl Safina, whose 2011 book, A Sea in Flames, The Deepwater Horizon Oil Blowout, chronicles that disaster. Here's that conversation. Carl Safina, thanks so much for joining us here. Back in 2011, I spoke with you about your book, A Sea in Flames, The Deepwater Horizon Blowout. Could you just briefly sum up the environmental toll of that spill, the Deepwater Horizon spill?
You know what? It's not easy to sum that up correctly or quickly for a few reasons. One is that most of the science, well, first of all, there was very, very, very poor baseline science on almost all the things you'd want to know about, on the number of birds that were in the Gulf, the number of turtles that were in the Gulf, the number of dolphins, the extent of the wetlands, the fish populations, how the fish populations were reproducing, and what is a normal rate of spawning for the fish, all the things you would want to compare before and after, there was almost no information on it. And then all of the studies that were done about the oil, the actual formal studies that were done, were kept under wraps for many years, because it was all in court. And so there's really a lot of confusion over it. I can tell you that at the time, the amount of oil on the ocean was unbelievable in the Northern Gulf, and it spread from the well site all the way to the Florida Panhandle. It got less and less the farther away that you went, because it was coming out of one spot and it was getting dispersed and diluted. They were sinking a lot of it with those dispersants that they were dropping from the planes. So there was a tremendous amount of confusion over how much oil, what the effects were. And to this day, I would say nobody really can tell you. I don't think that there were a lot of very long-term effects in most of the region. And I make an exception in South Louisiana, right where the worst of it washed ashore directly there. There were very long-term effects, including health effects to people, and a tremendous amount of oil in the seabed there, right in the very shallow areas and in the bays. I think that a lot of it has since dissipated and more or less healed up, with the caveat that there is what you would want to know that really nobody knows.
When the Exxon Valdez spill happened in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, there were quite severe long-term effects that were noted on the fish and mammal populations. Is it just not long enough to see the kinds of effects that we saw with the Exxon Valdez now in the Deepwater Horizon in the Gulf?
No, it's a totally different system. There is a lot of oil naturally in the Gulf of Mexico, and a lot of it seeps out naturally in the Gulf of Mexico. Before they did any drilling, it's been seeping out there for many thousands of years, and there are bacteria that are adapted to eating oil. In a warm place, all of that stuff goes on at a much faster pace than it does in a cold place. In Alaska, there isn't any oil there where the Valdez wrecked, and the system is unable to cope with it, and the oil does not dissipate or dissolve or get metabolized by anything there, except it gets eaten by, gets in the system, getting eaten by the fish and the birds and in turn the mammals. And that's why the effects there are a lot different than they seem to be in the Gulf.
So now the Trump administration has announced that it's going to allow offshore oil drilling in nearly all U.S. coastal waters. Now, after they made that announcement, they said that they would take Florida off the table. Maybe that's because the president's property, Mar-a-Lago, is in Florida. And we don't really know. And of course, that was also after Florida Governor Rick Scott met with Ryan Zinke, Secretary of the Interior. But here in the Northern Atlantic, it seems that oil drilling is that they plan to have oil drilling go right ahead. What's your comment on this now reversal of the Obama era policy to take U.S. coastal waters out of the running in terms of offshore oil and gas drilling?
Well, my understanding is that every 5 years, the president is by law required to consider whether or not to lease areas of the continental shelves of the U.S. to oil and gas exploration and possible drilling. I'm not sure if that is still the law, but that's how I understood it when I was writing about the Deepwater Horizon blowout. At any rate, Obama did, at first anyway, put a number of places on the East Coast on the table for bidding and possible exploration. And then in the whole process of studying whether that was a good idea or not, those places were eventually withdrawn. I think that the time to move full steam ahead on renewables and not going farther and deeper and longer and more for fossil fuels with all the problems that we know fossil fuels bring with them, I think that time is long past. So I would hate to see any drilling on the East Coast. And it's not just drilling. There's a tremendous amount of noise and disruption that goes with it. It disrupts the ability of marine mammals to exist in an area and to feed there. And, it's a big disruption. It's not just a matter of we put oil wells here and maybe there's a small chance that one of them will explode. It's everything else that goes along with it, and all the increased activity along the shore, all the new ships and terminals and boats and pipelines and everything else that goes along with it. And I'm against all of that stuff. I think that the time for that is long since passed. When petroleum was first even recognized as a possible fuel in the mid 1800s. Oil was coming out of the ground in Pennsylvania because there were just gigantic reservoirs of oil. Those are all completely tapped out and completely gone. The first oil wells that went into the water were back around the maybe late 40s and 1950s. It was a big deal to drill in water that was 10 feet deep. We're talking about, moving into wetlands because the easy places on shore were dried up. Now it's water that's over a mile deep with wells that go 3 miles below the seafloor. So it's completely, it's a completely desperate thing that technology is always getting better and better and better because they have to. But with that, the risks become greater and greater and greater, as we saw with the blowout in the Gulf. And the Gulf is the best place for a blowout to happen because it's warm, because there are thousands of ships. There's all kinds of ability to fabricate things, manufacture things, get stuff, equipment where you need it. That is not true in most of the rest of the coast. And the colder areas are much, much worse in that regard and much, much riskier. And if anything like the Deepwater Horizon happened on the north, off the north coast of Africa or in the Bering Sea, the chances of getting equipment to it or doing anything with it are so much more difficult that, it would probably be years before they were able to fix that leak. It took 4 months in the Gulf of Mexico as it was.
And what about offshore the Atlantic here off our coastline in New York? I have noticed that New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, as well as California, Oregon, and Washington have opposed the offshore oil drilling plans. I'm not sure if New York is going to join that. I know Governor Cuomo recently made a comment about it. How would it affect us here?
Well, for first, I'm not sure how much oil there is here. There may very well be a significant deposit of oil out where the mouth of the Hudson River used to be, because there's a lot of oil at the mouth of rivers. And the mouth of the river used to be 75 miles or so southeast of where it is now. That place is called the Hudson Canyon, and it's under 400 feet of water, and then it drops off the shelf into much deeper water. That would be a place where they would be looking for oil. And it's like all these other governors are opposing it because they don't want a catastrophic spill or a boat to crash with something like the Exxon Valdez, where the boat spills the oil or well blows out and oil washes ashore. They don't want any of that stuff. So we would be no different. The farther north you go and the more you risk having something happen that involves ice or the winter, the riskier it potentially is.
Also, this isn't the only thing the Trump administration has done recently. They're also poised to roll back oil safety drilling regulations that were put in place after the Deepwater Horizon spill. What's your opinion of that?
Well, I thought the safety precautions that were put in place after the blowout were not enough. So I think, rolling back safety is what can one even logically say about that? And why would anybody want to make anything less safe? So I will withhold comment because my comment is so self-evident, I guess.
Yeah. It also went along with ending the oil spill liability trust fund. That's something that the GOP-dominated Congress has just done. Do you know what happened there, and why did the Congress go ahead and do that?
Not exactly, but I mean the Republicans are very anti they're anti any kind of regulating, and safety regulations are regulations. So a fund that would pay for damages essentially is a regulatory thing, and it's a fund, and they seem to be against any of that stuff. They like to let everybody do whatever they feel like doing. And I like to let everybody do whatever they feel like doing also. The problem is when you do that, there are some very, very irresponsible people who create enormous problems. The Deepwater Horizon did not blow out just because it was an accident. It blew out because they were in a big hurry. They had some very fierce arguments on the rig about what to do and what not to do that night, when there were indications that something was wrong, and they created what I called a chain disaster, where about six different things all had to happen before that thing blew out, and they made the wrong decision every single time because they didn't want to stop and they were in a hurry. That's why you need regulations and safeguards to minimize the kinds of reckless mistakes that human beings sometimes make, and you can definitely rely on the fact that if you have a lot of something going on, somebody will make some reckless mistakes.
So what do you think we can do to try and stop this? Do you think that this is actually going to go forward? And I should also say that there is a 30-day comment period about getting rid of those regulations that were put in effect after the Deepwater Horizon spill. What can we do to weigh in?
Well, these people are obviously very immune to comment, and they're going to try to do as much as they can while they can, as fast as they can. But these things do take a long time. The exploration would take a long time. The drilling would take a long time. Getting the oil, building all that stuff would take a long time. And hopefully a year from now, the Congress will shift, and there'll be a couple of big logs in their road and some major speed bumps. So that's what I'm hoping.
Carl Safina, you are the author of, among a number of wonderful books, A Sea in Flames, The Deepwater Horizon Oil Blowout. Thank you so much for joining us here.
Well, thank you very much for the conversation. I'm always honored to be with you. Thank you.
You're listening to Sustainable East End. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Last April, the Trump administration announced that seismic surveys would be allowed off the Atlantic seaboard. The surveys are used to identify oil resources in preparation for drilling. Before leaving office, President Obama closed off the waters off the East Coast to oil and gas exploration. Now the Trump administration wants to cancel that ban. It's planning to use seismic blasts to identify offshore areas for oil and gas leases, a practice that poses serious threats to marine animals. Last spring, we talked with Peter Stauffer, Environmental Director for the Surfrider Foundation, about seismic surveys and their potential effect on marine life. Peter Stauffer, welcome to Sustainable East End. We called you up to find out more about the proposed seismic surveys planned to happen in the Atlantic Ocean off the eastern seaboard. Tell us, what are seismic surveys and why is this coming up right now?
Well, on April 28th, President Trump signed an executive order to expand offshore drilling in U.S. waters. And one of the places they're looking at opening up for drilling is the Atlantic coast. So the seismic surveys are a way for companies to identify oil and gas resources. So that is what the announcement was last week, that the administration is likely going to allow companies to do those surveys.
So describe them.
It's seismic blasting. So essentially you have ships that tow these air guns, and the air guns emit these blasts or explosions underwater. And that's how they identify oil resources beneath the seafloor.
What is the impact on marine life of these seismic blasts?
Well, seismic blasting is incredibly disruptive to marine life. In fact, the federal government's own environmental impact statement said there would be major impacts on marine mammals, so whales, dolphins, as well as sea turtles and fish populations. And it's very disruptive. So at close range, it can cause mortality or permanent injury, but also interferes with just sort of basic life cycle behavior of different types of marine life.
Hadn't President Obama declared the Atlantic seaboard off limits to offshore oil and gas exploration?
Yeah, that's correct. Last year, the Obama administration made a final decision that protects the Atlantic coast from new offshore drilling. So unfortunately, the Trump administration is planning to revise that decision. So the seismic blasting or the surveys are the first step to opening our coast to new offshore drilling.
And can you give us a sense of the scope of the area they're talking about? From where to where?
Yeah, so the area that they're looking at for seismic surveys is off the mid and South Atlantic. There's six different companies that have applied for permits to do these surveys. These permits were all rejected by the Obama administration, but now the Trump administration has said they're going to revisit that decision. So, you know, we could have a number of companies literally traversing thousands of miles of ocean doing this seismic blasting, which again is very disruptive for marine life and the marine ecosystem.
Are there any endangered species that are going to be in the way of this seismic blasting?
There are. So one of the species of concern is the right whale, which is critically endangered. There's only several hundred left in the Atlantic Ocean, and they depend on sound for their, you know, basic life function. So there's enormous concern that, you know, not only would these surveys damage the population, but it would violate the Endangered Species Act and Marine Mammal Protection Act.
So this sounds pretty devastating. How long does this go on, and could this actually kill whales?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the environmental impact statement that the federal government conducted estimated there could be over 100,000 mortalities to different species of marine mammals. So we are talking about a very significant impact. These surveys can last for weeks or months on end. And again, we're looking at potentially multiple companies surveying the same swaths of ocean and doing this for an extended period.
So now you represent the Surfriders Foundation. Why do surfers care about this?
Well, you know, surfers have a strong connection to the ocean, and many of us either live on the coast or visit the coast. So we have a real vested interest in sort of our coastal communities. Offshore drilling is a really dirty and dangerous industry. It pollutes the ocean, it industrializes the coast, and it puts our communities at risk of oil spills. So, you know, not just surfers, but coastal communities up and down the Atlantic coast have said very clearly that they don't want to see new offshore drilling.
Is there any kind of opposition that's developed to this seismic blasting and offshore drilling?
There is. To date, over 120 different communities on the East Coast have passed resolutions against either offshore drilling or seismic testing. And they've done so because they know they depend on a clean coastal environment. You know, we're fortunate to have tourism and recreation and fishing industries that generate literally billions of dollars for our nation's economy. So new oil rigs off the Atlantic coast would put all that at risk. And it's also noteworthy that over 100 members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, have sent a letter to the administration asking them not to expand offshore drilling. So this is a bipartisan issue. And, you know, we're seeing people on both sides of the aisle say that, you know, we don't need new offshore drilling off our coasts.
I understand that there's also some legislation in the works.
There is. We have, you know, a number of different bills that have been introduced, again, both by Democrats and Republicans, that would limit or restrict either seismic testing or offshore drilling. So we're seeing those bills gain support from a lot of constituents.
The Trump administration has not yet been noteworthy for, you know, being particularly responsive to the needs of constituents when it comes to environmental concerns. I wonder if there are any other ways, for example, by legal means, that if these leases are granted, they could be held up.
Yeah. Well, over the next year, the Department of the Interior will lead a process to evaluate these different options for new offshore drilling. So there will be opportunities for public comment in terms of both public hearings and online comment opportunities. You know, I think what we've seen is that opposition from communities and from businesses is very powerful. You know, we have over 35,000 different businesses on the Atlantic coast that have asked the administration not to move forward with offshore drilling. So, you know, even though the administration has come out and said they want to open new areas, including the Atlantic, to offshore drilling, I think we have a great opportunity with the grassroots opposition to prevent this from happening.
So where can people go to find out more about this if they want to join this effort in opposition?
Well, one place to go is surfrider.org. We have lots of information on the offshore drilling issue and how to get involved in terms of making your voice heard. Well, one of the best things you can do is reach out to your federal representatives and let them know that you don't want to see offshore drilling in the Atlantic Ocean. They're going to be huge influencers in this decision. And, you know, again, that's what we've seen when members of Congress tell the administration not to open our coast to drilling. The administration will often listen.
Pete Stauffer of Surfrider Foundation, I want to thank you so much for talking with us here on WPKN.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
The Surfrider Foundation is joining with the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Sierra Club, Oceana, the League of Conservation Voters, and many other groups in holding bipartisan public hearings to voice opposition to Trump's offshore drilling ban. These hearings are being held across the nation, and if you would like to add your voice, here are three being held in our listening area or nearby. A hearing will be held in Hartford, Connecticut on February 13th, One will be held in Trenton, New Jersey on February 14th, and finally one in Albany on February 15th. Go to sustainableeastend.blogspot.com for more information about those hearings. Next up, here's a Sustainable East End bonus. Poet Grace Shulman recorded at Canio's Books in Sag Harbor for East End, Inc.
This poem is called The Sound. Akabonic, Shinnecock, Peconic, Napeague, the creek, the bay, the stream, the sounds of consonants, hard C's and K's, Atlantic, the ocean surge, the clicks of waves collapsed on rocks in corrugated waters. The crowd circling a stranded whale sent by the god Moshop to beach at Pominock. The Montauks left us names. Their successors, Millers and Bennetts, whose names are carved on local gravestones, rode rough tides, strung trawl lines for cod, and even on Sundays parked vans by the sea and grazed in fear until commercial hulls replaced their boats. Surfmen gave names to streets that bag the tourists, who prize their charm. I hear old sailors rage in many languages against cold winds, the light now clear, now haze, Pharaohs and Mulfords, whalers, names unknown, hurl throaty curses that rise with the sound of waves and with the cries of an ice-colored gull plucking scallops in shallows.
Poet Grace Shulman recorded at Canio's Books in Sag Harbor for East End, Inc. East End, Inc. is heard on the fourth Wednesday each month on WPKN. This is Sustainable East End. Tonight we talked with Stony Brook University conservation biologist and author Carl Safina. And we also talked with Surfrider Foundation environmental director Peter Stauffer. Carl Safina's books include Song for the Blue Ocean, Eye of the Albatross, The View from Lazy Point, A Sea in Flames, and Beyond Words, How Animals Think and Feel. The Surfrider Foundation, USA, is a grassroots nonprofit environmental organization that works to protect and preserve the world's oceans, waves, and beaches. Its work focuses on water quality, beach access, beach and surf spot preservation, and sustaining marine and coastal ecosystems. You can listen to Sustainable East End on the third Wednesday of each month on WPKN. Sustainable East End is produced by Tony Ernst and me, Francesca Rhiannon.